Hi, everyone. This is Jillian with Court Junkie. Court Junkie is a true crime podcast that covers court cases and criminal trials using audio clips and interviews with people close to the cases. Court Junkie is available on Apple Podcasts and PodcastOne.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 235 of the True Crime All the Time Unsolved podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, how are you?
Hey, man, I'm doing good. How about you?
Doing excellent. Can't wait to get into this episode. We actually have a lot out this weekend on True Crime All the Time. We have an episode out right now on Todd Kohlhepp, one of South Carolina's most notorious serial killers. He's a pretty bad dude.
He was a really bad dude.
He's currently serving multiple life sentences in prison for killing seven people. We also just put out a brand new Patreon episode on Brandon Clark and the murder of Bianca Devins. So if you're a Patreon member, check that out. If you're not, now's a great time to sign up. So let's give our shout outs. We had Lisa Berry.
Hey, Alicia.
Patricia Fagin.
What's going on, Patricia?
Scott Copeland.
Hey, Scott.
Leanne Moore.
Appreciate that, Leanne.
Jared Bailey.
What's going on, Jared?
Michelle Bird.
Hey, Michelle.
Charlotte May.
Well, yes, you may.
Kathleen Edinger.
What's going on, Edinger?
Erica Bruce.
Appreciate that, Erica.
Tiffany Heal.
Oh, good old Tiffany.
Holly Rude.
Hey, Holly.
Bailey Willis.
Like how you spell that, Bailey.
Javen Schutte.
What's up, Javen?
Angela H.
Hey, Angela.
Yvette Lormond.
Thank you, Yvette.
Jana Simpson.
Hey, Jana.
And Alexis Clark.
There's Alexis.
So we appreciate that new support. And then if we go back into the vault, Gibbs, this week we selected Natalie Webb.
Hey, Natalie.
So we appreciate all the Patreon support, new, and the people that support us month after month. We had some PayPal donations from Kimberly Silva.
Thank you, Kimberly.
Kelly Baker.
What's up, Kelly?
And Sue Lewis.
Hey, Sue.
So thanks to all of you as well. All right, buddy. Are you ready to get into this episode of True Crime All the Time Unsolved?
I'm ready.
We're in our home state of Ohio, and we're talking about the unsolved disappearance of Brian Schaefer. It was on April 1st, 2006. That 27-year-old pre-med student Brian Schaefer disappeared after a night of bar hopping with friends around the Columbus campus of Ohio State University, where he had an apartment nearby. While the case quickly went cold for police, it ignited the interest of online web sleuths who believed the case was solvable. Even with the amount of attention that Brian's case continues to receive online and in the mainstream press, it remains unsolved to this day. According to reports on the Charlie Project website, Brian Randall Schaefer was born on February 25th, 1979, to Renee and Randy Schaefer. Brian had an older brother, Derek. The family resided in Pickerington, a suburb of Columbus, Ohio.
That's where my brother lives.
Yeah, it's a nice place. They always have a good football team.
They do.
Brian was a good student. He also excelled at sports, especially tennis. He grew into a tall, athletic, handsome young man who was incredibly close with his mom, Renee, who was a microbiologist.
Pretty cool. Microbiologist.
Yeah. Pretty impressive job. And it really was Renee who encouraged him and inspired his entry into medical school. Brian's first passion was music, and he dreamed of being a professional musician in a band. He wrote on his MySpace page that music was his all-consuming passion, whereas he saw medicine as just a job to see him through until he could get his career in music off the ground. Okay, I think a lot of people would look at that the opposite way.
Right.
You know, if you're going to go all the way through medical school, that's going to be your all-consuming career. not a jumping off point until you can get your band going. Cause that's a lot of work.
It is.
You know, it's not like you're working at Starbucks or a gas station or something just until your music career kicks off. But I think what it tells you is how high the level of passion was that he had for music.
Yeah. You had passion like that once for music.
I did.
Yeah.
You know what I didn't have was a MySpace page.
You didn't.
And you know what nobody has anymore? A MySpace page.
I think you're right.
He wrote that he dreamed of smoking one with Bob Marley on the beach.
I think a lot of people might have thought about that.
Might have dreamed about that for sure. And he said his dream was to have a band that played Jimmy Buffett type music. And he wanted to live on the beach with his favorite senorita.
Hey, not a bad dream.
No, absolutely not. And it does sound kind of like the dream of, let's say, a high school kid who's still finding his way in life. Now, he was a pre-med student, so he had a kind of a career path in mind, but it didn't stop him from having all these other dreams. Brian grew his hair long and he played in a garage band. When his coach began pestering him about cutting his hair to remain on the tennis team, which Brian was the captain of, he quit the team.
He had standards, man. Don't mess with my hair.
He really valued that hair.
Yeah.
To the point where it may not have been that hard of a decision for him. Brian graduated from high school and then headed off to the Ohio State University. Brian received his bachelor's degree in microbiology at OSU. Then he remained there for medical school. He lived in an apartment with his best friend, William Clint Florence. According to an interview on the show, Brian Schaefer, Dead or Alive, Brian spent the summer of 2005 traveling back and forth to Puerto Rico for a pre-med program, sometimes with his girlfriend, Alexis Wagner. Alexis's father, Tom Wagner, told the show that Brian had been to Puerto Rico multiple times, both alone and with friends. He traveled extensively throughout the country, and he loved the people and culture he experienced while he was there.
Well, Puerto Rico is a very beautiful place.
Well, you know, you got the beaches. You know, it kind of fits, right, with some of the things that he had written, his dreams. He obviously liked the beach.
I remember what I liked there was the Puerto Rican bakeries.
Mm.
They were so good.
I have to admit, I've never actually been to Puerto Rico. Yeah.
Well, if you go to the bakery.
Okay. That'll be my first stop.
Yeah.
Because when I think Puerto Rico, I think baked goods.
Mm. Good stuff. I'm telling you.
For Christmas 2005, Renee Schaefer gave Brian and his girlfriend, Alexis, a trip to Miami, Florida to enjoy the beach during their spring break, which was scheduled to occur from April 1st to April 10th of 2006. Alexis was also a medical student, and she was in a few classes with Brian. The two began dating and soon became an exclusive couple. Brian spoke with his mother about his plans to propose to Alexis, possibly while they were in Miami. Renee gave him some recommendations for jewelers to shop for engagement rings, but Brian's excitement and happiness were soon derailed. On March 6th, 2006, Brian was devastated when his mother died of bone marrow cancer. This occurred just 3 weeks before he went missing. While he was saddened by his mother's passing, friends and family reported that Brian did not engage in any type of self-destructive behavior. His grades did drop a little during this period, but not to the point where it endangered his participation in the medical program, and he passed his midterm exam.
I think that'd be really tough to do, you know, to keep your concentration, to do what you need to do in school at that point, especially knowing how close he was with his mom.
Yes, he was very close with her. And I agree with you. I think it would be tough, especially given the field that he's in. You know, I was never in medical school, graduate medical school.
Right.
I imagine the midterms are a little on the tough side.
Yeah.
So, you know, to keep that level of concentration during a very difficult period in your life, that says a lot about your character.
Sure does.
On April 1st, 2006, Brian Schaefer went missing after a night out drinking with friends. He's never been found, like Maura Murray and Madeline McCann. Brian's case captured the attention of online sleuths and people from around the world. The reasons for the amount of attention on Brian's case have been debated, from the fact that he was a white male college student to the fact that his case, at least on the surface, seems to many to be very solvable. According to the Columbus Dispatch, at the time of his disappearance, Brian was 6 foot two and weighed about 170 pounds. He has brown hair and hazel eyes and sometimes wears glasses. He was last seen wearing a short sleeve olive green polo on top of a long sleeved white shirt, blue jeans, and white sneakers. His bank accounts have not been touched, and his cell phone has not been used in the time since he disappeared. As reported in the Columbus Monthly magazine, Friday, March 31st, 2006, was the last day of classes for students at Ohio State before spring break. Brian and Alexis had plans to leave for their trip to Miami on Monday, April 3rd. That Friday evening, Brian met with his father, Randy, for a steak dinner at Outback Steakhouse on the city's east side. Randy later recalled how tired and worn out his son looked that night, and when Brian told him he planned to go out on the town with his friend and former roommate Clint that evening, Randy said he regretted not encouraging his son to turn in early instead of going out.
I bet he did look a little rough and tired. I mean, just came off of losing his mom and then getting through all his, you know, midterm exams.
Well, and what father is not going to regret doing something different, you know, when you later find out that your son is missing?
Right.
You're going to look back at that night and think, what could I have done? All right. I could have said, hey, man, you look tired. You shouldn't go out. Because in his mind, I'm sure he thinks, if he doesn't go out, he doesn't go missing. According to the website findbrianschaefer.com, at 9:30 p.m., Brian met up with Clint at the Ugly Tuna Saloon, a bar that catered to the college crowd and was near the OSU campus in the South Campus Gateway Shopping Center. The Ugly Tuna Saloon is on the second floor of the shopping center, and patrons take an escalator from the ground floor to the second level, where there's also a movie theater, but that was closed due to construction.
Hey, that escalator is the only way you can get up to that bar.
Speaking from experience.
That escalator is the only way to get up to that bar.
At 9:56 p.m., Brian called Alexis, who was home visiting family in Toledo, and he left her a voicemail telling her that he loved her and that he would see her when she returned to Columbus for their trip to Miami on Monday.
So good boyfriend, right? Checking on his girlfriend, making sure everything's okay.
Yeah, I think a lot of boyfriends would do that, especially if you know you're going out that night. You're probably going to have a few Coca-Colas. You may not be in a position to leave that voicemail later. That's smart. NBC's Dateline aired CCTV footage of Brian and Clint leaving the Ugly Tuna, where they took the escalator to the first floor and walked nearly 2 miles to the Arena District in Columbus. This is an area known for live music, concerts, and bars. The two men stopped at several bars along the way, downing a shot at each one, sort of like an impromptu bar crawl.
It's kind of like a night out with you when we go to CrimeCon.
Yeah. Yep, I have been on a number of bar crawls in my life. Some ended well, some not so well.
I think many probably didn't end
well. Well, the ones in college did not end well. I can tell you that for sure.
Frank the Tank.
At one of their stops, they met up with a young woman named Meredith, who was a friend of theirs, and she offered to give them a ride back to the Ugly Tuna, an offer that Brian and Clint happily accepted. The CCTV footage shows the three returning to the Ugly Tuna at 1:15 a.m. on what was now April 1st. In the footage, Brian walks ahead across the courtyard leading to the escalator that took them to the second floor and the entrance to the Ugly Tuna Saluna, and Clinton Meredith were chatting as they made their way behind him. A live band was playing when they arrived, and the bar was crowded and loud.
And what college bars aren't crowded and loud?
None that I've ever been to. Brian began talking with another co-ed named Brighton, who later said they were both tipsy at this point. In an interview with the Brian Schaefer Dead or Alive show, Brighton said she can't remember much of what they talked about, but that Brian was kissing her neck, which prompted her to enter her phone number into a cell phone. And Gibbs, she hadn't known Brian before this night, and she doesn't remember seeing Clint or Meredith that evening, but admitted her memory was impaired due to alcohol consumption.
I think several people's memories were affected by the alcohol that night.
And that's usually what happens when you go out to a bar. Unless you're just there to have one or two drinks, we all know it doesn't take very long to get a little tipsy. And then later on, the next day, the next morning, and then obviously as time passes, it does affect the memory.
Sure.
It's hard sometimes to remember what happened when you've had, you know, some to drink. The bar staff began last call around 1:45 a.m. The bar was set to close at 2:30. According to Brighton, Brian offered to walk her and her friend Amber to their car in the parking garage. CCTV footage shows Brian leaving the Ugly Tuna Saluna with Brighton and Amber, and he's seen speaking with them on the platform outside the bar near the escalators. That is the last known sighting of Brian Schaefer. He doesn't walk the girls to their car. When asked in an interview with the Brian Schaefer Dead or Alive show, Brighton said she believed it was because Brian had gotten distracted by something, so the girls headed to the car on their own. Brian is seen speaking to Brighton and Amber outside the Ugly Tuna on the CCTV footage at 1:56 a.m. He then walked outside the range of the camera and is never seen again. Clinton Meredith told the Columbus Monthly that they waited outside for Brian to appear. They repeatedly called his cell phone. He didn't answer. And when he never showed up, they assumed he went home to his apartment, so they left.
I think most friends would think that too.
Yeah, I've been in that situation before, right? You went as a group. Somebody got split off, or multiple people got split off. You kind of all assumed that you were probably leaving at the same time. But if you don't see them, you wait around for them. Yeah, you just assume they left without you.
Yeah.
But they got back to where they were supposed to be going. Your first thought is never going to be, uh-oh, something has happened to them.
No.
In that situation, I just don't think it is.
No, back in those college days like that, I never was worried if I didn't see my friends until the next day.
Yeah, because something was always happening, and eventually everybody would meet back up.
Maybe tell some good stories.
There'd be some good stories for sure. According to interviews with the Columbus Monthly, Brian's girlfriend Alexis tried reaching him on Saturday, April 1st by phone. Her call went right to voicemail. She figured he was still sleeping after the night out drinking, so she wasn't too worried. But as the weekend approached their Monday departure for Miami and Alexis still couldn't reach Brian, she became more concerned.
As any partner in a relationship would be.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Next morning, the concern level is low. You know that he went out drinking, but now we've got this flight that is coming quickly. The concern level rises and rises. In her interview with Columbus Monthly, Alexis said she went to the airport on Monday, April 3rd, as planned, with the hope that Brian would show up ready to join her on their flight to Florida so that they could enjoy their spring break. But that didn't happen.
That'd be nerve-wracking for her, sitting there waiting. You know, they're doing the last call. He's not there. He's not answering his phone. At that point, you got to know you have a major problem.
Yeah, I would think she would have been frantic at that point, thinking, okay, now something is really wrong. Brian's family was not able to reach him by phone that weekend either. His father, Randy, then reported him missing to the Columbus police. I think it's safe to say, Gibbs, that investigators in Brian's case were baffled by his disappearance. There was only one public entrance and exit from the ugly Tuna Saluna, which was covered by CCTV. Detectives told Columbus Monthly magazine they painstakingly accounted for every single patron who entered the bar, all except for Brian. They admitted that Brian might have changed his clothes or maybe disguised his appearance for the cameras, one of which panned across the entrance area and was constantly moving. Investigators also reviewed footage from cameras in the Gateway Complex area for any sign of Brian, but they came up empty. Officers and detectives began an extensive search for Brian, starting at the Gateway Complex and the ugly Tuna Saluna, and then they spread out from there. They searched on foot, they used search dogs, they interviewed residents and business owners in the area. They put up flyers and even searched the sewer system in that part of the city.
So they're doing everything that they possibly can to try to locate him.
Yeah. I mean, they're really putting a lot into it, it sounds like. But they had no luck finding Brian. They also had no luck finding any clues that could assist them in his missing person case.
Kind of like he just vanished in thin air?
That's what it seems like. Hey, TCAT fans, did you know that every year, property crimes like burglaries and package theft spike over the holiday season? That's why there's no better time than now to invest in SimpliSafe. This week, SimpliSafe are giving TCAT listeners 40% off their award-winning home security system. I've been using SimpliSafe for about 4 years now, and it was one of the best decisions I've ever made. It allowed me to get rid of my home phone, and it really is just an all-around great home security system. We love SimpliSafe because it has everything you need to make your home safe. Indoor and outdoor cameras, comprehensive sensors, all monitored around the clock by trained professionals who send help the instant you need it. It was even named Best Home Security Systems of 2021 by U.S. News and World Report. You can easily customize a system for your home online in minutes and even get free custom recommendations from SimpliSafe. These are SimpliSafe's biggest discounts of the year. You can get a complete home security system starting at just over $100. There are no long-term contracts or commitments. It's a really easy way to start feeling a bit more peace of mind. This offer ends soon. Take 40% off at simplysafe.com/TCAT today. Go to simplysafe.com/TCAT, T-C-A-T. Away is a modern lifestyle brand that creates thoughtful products for every traveler and every kind of trip. They started with the perfect suitcase, crafted with features that make travel more seamless. I know I'm taking my Away suitcase to CrimeCon next year. All of Away's suitcases are designed to last a lifetime with durable exteriors that can withstand even the roughest of baggage handlers. They have an interior organization system that includes a built-in compression pad to help you pack more in. Four 360-degree spinner wheels guarantee the smoothest roll. They're available in different materials in a variety of colors and sizes. If any part of your suitcase breaks, Away's standout customer service team will arrange to have it fixed or replaced. And they have a 100-day trial on everything that they make. So take the product out on the road, live with it, travel with it, get lost with it for 100 days. And if you decide it's not for you, you can return any non-personalized item for a full refund during that period. There's no ifs, ands, or asterisks. Away offers free shipping and returns on any order within the contiguous US, UK, Europe, and Canada. So start your 100-day trial and shop the entire Away lineup of travel essentials, including their best-selling suitcases at awaytravel.com/time. That's awaytravel.com/time. The Columbus police found Brian's car parked outside his apartment on King Avenue, several blocks from the ugly Tuna. Inside Brian's apartment, his father, Randy, found Brian's bank book, passport, and credit cards, which had not been used since he disappeared. And nothing inside the apartment gave any indication of foul play. Police asked those who were close to Brian and had seen or talked to him that evening to take polygraph tests. His father, Randy, and his girlfriend, Alexis, agreed and reportedly passed, while his friend, Clint, refused to participate on the advice of his attorney.
Well, nothing wrong with that, but you know it's not going to go over well.
Well, it's not going to look great to a lot of people, but I think if you really sit back and analyze it, you can see why innocent people, people who had nothing to do with whatever case you're talking about, would not want to take a polygraph test.
Yeah.
There are tons of reasons for it, and it's why a lot of attorneys advise against it. According to The Lantern, the OSU student-ran newspaper, Brian's friend and former roommate Clint quickly fell under suspicion. Number one, Gibbs, he was one of the last people to see Brian alive.
Sure.
On the night that he went missing. And then, just like we talked about, right, suspicion grew after Clint refused to take a polygraph test at detectives' request. Obviously, he obtained an attorney because his attorney advised him against taking it.
Right.
He also stopped talking with police.
Probably at the advice of his attorney.
I would say. I don't know that for sure, but I would say that's probably accurate.
Well, look, I would do the same thing. But you can also see how his actions cause many to look at him with increased suspicion.
Yeah. No, I get it. Now, it should be noted that Clint was never named as an official suspect by police, and no charges have ever been brought against him in the case. It was reported in the Columbus Monthly magazine that Clint was subpoenaed to appear before the grand jury in the matter concerning Brian Schaefer's disappearance. But Clint's lawyer, Neil Rosenberg, negotiated with the prosecutor, and Clint was excused from testifying in those proceedings.
Well, it pays to have a good attorney.
It does. We know that. Everyone knows that. If you can afford one, there are huge benefits from having a good attorney. There's just no way around it.
Yeah.
An unnamed friend of Brian's told the show Brian Schaefer, Dead or Alive, that Brian and Clint had a troubled relationship. He said that Brian and Clint argued a lot. He talked about an argument on the night of April 1st at the Ugly Tuna, and that Brian told him they argued on St. Patrick's Day and had an argument that led to them no longer being roommates.
Well, that's a pretty serious argument then, right? If you're saying you got to move out, or the other guy says, I'm moving out, I've had it with you.
Yeah, considering it was reported that they were pretty good friends. So, you know, obviously whatever was causing these arguments caused a rift that led to them having to live separately.
Yeah. I mean, look, how many times have I left here saying, I'm not going to stay here anymore, I've had enough?
Never. But if you did, I would say, don't let the door hit you on the ass on the way out.
No. You say, that's you're not supposed to stay here anyway. Get out of here. Yeah,
you don't live here. Please leave. Now, when Brighton was asked if she heard the two arguing that night, she said she couldn't recall witnessing any specific interactions between Brian and Clint, and that she was never even introduced to Clint that night. She spent most of her time with Brian, who she said was flirting with her. In an interview with Rita Cosby for MSNBC, Clint said that Brian returned inside the bar to speak with the band at closing time, and he said Brian had a habit of wandering off. Clint described Brian as a womanizer, and Gibbs, he was pretty critical of his behavior with Brighton that night. Randy said he was horrified by Clint's description of Brian. And Derek, Brian's older brother, said he never expected someone who called himself a friend of Brian's to be so critical of him in public interviews.
Yeah, I think it was probably shocking to hear someone say something like that about Brian.
In the wake of your friend disappearing.
Yeah.
I get that. Why so critical? Okay. You didn't approve of his behavior that night with Brian, knowing that he had a girlfriend. I get that. Do you need to air that during an interview with MSNBC.
Yeah, does it do anything to help the case? No.
You're just airing dirty laundry. It's not that it's inaccurate. You know, obviously that's the way he felt, but I could see why the family would be like, why?
Yeah, well, it's not needed.
Why do you feel the need to drag Brian's name through the mud like that? In a later interview that Clint gave to NBC4, Randy and Derek said Clint changed his story. Instead of saying that Brian returned inside the bar to speak with the band, he now said that Brian returned to the bar to speak to some girls. He described Brian as not popular and said he was a bit of a loner. Clint also said that Brian might have run his mouth, which may have gotten him into trouble with the wrong people that evening.
I'm going to say that if you look at Brian, you would think he was probably fairly popular. I don't want to go off looks alone.
No, I get what you're saying. Yeah. Good looking guy. Yeah. He's a graduate med student. Yeah. He's got a lot of stuff going for him. I think he came from a good family. They must have had some money.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about his mom giving him trips and things like that.
He was very fit.
Yeah, he was fit. He was a good athlete. So, I mean, just based on that stuff, which is, you know, again, some of it very superficial, it's hard to believe that he was, quote unquote, not popular.
Yeah.
It doesn't line up with the things that we've said about him.
Right.
And I don't think it lined up at all with what Randy and Derek, who would have known him, you know, as well as anyone, thought about him. Now, could he have been a guy who ran his mouth to the wrong people and that got him into trouble? Yeah, that could happen. That's happened to me on more than one occasion.
Yeah, we all been there before.
Yeah.
Yeah. You more than me.
Well, only because you can back it up, Jason Bourne. According to MelMagazine.com, Alexis said that she called Brian's phone for many months after his disappearance just to hear his voice on the voicemail greeting that he recorded, but her calls always went straight to voicemail. But one day in September 2006, when Alexis called Brian's phone, it rang several times before going to voicemail.
Well, that will get you excited.
And she was excited. She told Randy and Derek. They called Brian's phone, and they too heard it ring several times before going to voicemail. So you know what they had to have been thinking, Gibbs. Is Brian alive with his phone turned on, or did someone have his phone? Someone who might have information about his whereabouts?
It's good questions to ask.
Good questions to ask, but also questions or thoughts that are going to lead to some excitement, hope.
Yeah.
That, all right, maybe he's okay.
Well, sure, for so many months, you're thinking that he's gone, never going to see him again. Now you're like, maybe we got something here.
Alexis, Randy, and Derek contacted the Columbus PD with this news. They also called Brian's phone, and it also rang for them. After investigating the event with Singular Cellular, Columbus detectives told the family that the phone rang due to a cell tower glitch. Supposedly, the cell tower that the calls were routed through in Hilliard, about 14 miles northeast of Columbus, was overwhelmed and should have rejected the calls. But instead, the tower somehow made the phone ring for several hours.
Sounds like a good explanation.
It does, but obviously that would have been very deflating for Alexis, Randy, and Derek. During her interview with the show, Brian Schaefer, Dead or Alive, Brighton relayed that she happened to be employed with Verizon for over 7 years, performing technical support. She said she routinely investigated network issues and solved problems for the company and its consumers. Brighton was adamant that the only way a cell phone could communicate with the network was if it was on. It had to be powered on and be within range of a tower. She said, no way was that a glitch. Based on my experience with Verizon, that phone had to be turned on for it to ring. There's just no other way.
Well, maybe Singular and Verizon operate differently. Maybe.
yeah, who knows? I'm not a cellular technical expert. I don't know. What I do know is that if that's true, what Brighton said, then months after Brian's disappearance, his phone was turned on. So then you have to ask the question.
Yeah.
Who turned the phone on? Where was the phone?
Or you have to believe that it was just some kind of funky glitch.
Which is very believable. I mean, I think you already said it.
I mean, my phone's done things I could never give you an answer for. Like,
ring in the middle of recording a podcast?
Yes. When you say, my phone's off, man.
After you've told me that you had it on silent?
Yes. It's like somebody knows to turn it on somewhere else.
So Gibbs, I don't know the answer. I kind of lean towards the police and the cell phone company over a person who said, okay, I worked at Verizon for 7 years, but doesn't mean she's absolutely wrong.
No.
And like you said, could different companies operate differently? Maybe, I don't know. You know, some days can be a real struggle. The good news is I'm having a lot less of those since I found True Niagen. I love it. True Niagen helps fuel the cell's energy engines, maintain cellular metabolism, and even supports heart health in combination with a healthy lifestyle. With 13 published human clinical studies and backed by Nobel Prize winners, True Niagen is a supplement that's clinically proven to boost NAD levels, an essential coenzyme required for cellular energy and repair. Since I started taking True Niagen, I have more resiliency. It helps my muscles recover. I just feel like I have more zest for life. So add more vitality to your life today with True Niagen. Right now, new customers can save 10% on their first purchase by going to trueniagen.com/unsolved. Use our code unsolved. That's trueniagen.com/unsolved. Code unsolved to save 10% on your first purchase. trueniagen.com/unsolved. Code unsolved. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Brian's disappearance made local, regional, and national news for months. Brian loved the band Pearl Jam, and Pearl Jam heard about Brian's disappearance. They heard about his love for their band. So when performing in Columbus, the group announced Brian's plight to the audience. And they spent several minutes telling the crowd about the website concerning his disappearance. And many of the fans in attendance posted the footage captured on their cell phones to YouTube.
Well, hey, that's one way to get the message out there, man.
Yeah, and that's a type of coverage that you can't buy.
Right.
You know, as Brian's family, you can't pay for that.
No.
Even if you wanted to.
But you're glad to get it.
So now, Gibbs, let's look at some of the theories about what might have happened to Brian Schaefer over 15 years ago. According to both the Columbus Monthly Magazine and the book The Smiley Face Killer by Stephen Young, the possibility was considered that Brian could have been a victim of the so-called Smiley Face Killer. This is a serial killer who is thought to have been responsible for the deaths of many college men who have died under suspicious circumstances, usually disappearing after a night out drinking at a bar. Many of these men have turned up dead in bodies of water, sometimes miles away from their last known location or destination. The presence of a spray-painted graffiti of a smiley face near the location of where the men's bodies were recovered, often after the area had been searched multiple times, is what led to this suspected serial killer's name. Now, critics of the smiley face killer theory maintain that the smiley face killer is a conspiracy theory with no basis. Some believe it was conjured by two retired detectives who took it upon themselves to investigate the cases of missing and then young men later found dead after being reported missing near university bars near waterways. I do think in some of those cases, there are a lot of people that believe you've got drunk and confused students who could have possibly found their way toward the river and accidentally tumbled in. Then you have to add in drunken horseplay, showing off, and you know, there's a lot of ways that accidental deaths could have occurred.
Yeah, I mean, you could fall into the water, it could be cold, you got some heavy water current. even if you're a good swimmer, you know, if you've been drinking, your swimming is not that great.
No, you're definitely not as good at really anything.
Yeah.
If you've been drinking heavily.
Plus, it's at nighttime, so it's going to be dark out. It's going to be a little harder to navigate, figure out where you're at.
The book Case Studies in Drowning Forensics lists drowning as the second leading cause of accidental death in America, after traffic accidents for males within the same age range as Brian. Brian has never been found dead or alive, so no conclusions can be drawn regarding this theory. What we do know is that Randy searched the Olentangy River near Brian's apartment extensively after he received a tip from a psychic who told Randy that Brian's body was in that part of the river. So I think, Gibbs, when you look at it, really the only thing supposedly tying him to the work of the Smiley Face Killer is that he was a college student who went missing from a bar after a night of drinking. I just don't think there's a lot there. I think it's a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah, me too.
Now, we'll dive more into the Smiley Face Killer on a future episode of TCAT Unsolved, but I just don't see it here. There is another accident theory that Brian had wandered off into the Gateway Shopping Complex construction area by sneaking past security officers. And then once inside the construction area, he might have fallen to his death into some type of area where he just could never have been found. Maybe a wall, Gibbs, that they had not yet poured concrete into, a footing, a big hole in the ground. I don't know.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of theories, you know, surrounding those types of things. But what I will say is the construction area was later searched by cadaver dogs. The Texas-based group EquiSearch also helped, but no signs of Brian were ever found. According to the Lantern newspaper in October 2008, journalist Abigail Miner first reported that a new clue found in the case might indicate that Brian Schaefer is alive and living in the U.S. Virgin Islands. This clue came in from a strange source. Brian's father, Randy, was killed during a severe windstorm in September 2008. He was found in his backyard with a large tree covering his deceased body. An obituary for Randy Schaefer was posted in the Columbus Dispatch newspaper, which linked to an online guest book for friends and loved ones to sign. One comment in the guest book read, "Dad, I love you. Love, Brian." And then in parentheses, it had U.S. Virgin Islands.
It's going to get some attention.
Yeah, it immediately attracted the attention of a private investigator named Don Corbett, who had been hired to assist in Brian's case. He alerted the Columbus police detectives, who obtained a search warrant, which led them to discover the comment was posted from a public computer in Franklin County, Ohio. Columbus is located in Franklin County.
So nobody from the Virgin Islands was posting it.
Well, certainly no one who was in the Virgin Islands at that time. Authorities in the U.S. Virgin Islands have publicized Brian Schaefer's case. They've even set up a tip line for any leads that people may wish to phone in. But they report that to date, no substantial information has been obtained regarding Brian Schaefer's current whereabouts. In that same 2008 article by Abigail Miner for the Lantern newspaper, she interviewed the private investigator Corbett, who was critical of the Columbus police efforts in solving Brian's case. He filed with the courts to compel the Columbus PD to turn over all their records and evidence in the case, as he believes viable investigative avenues may have been ignored or overlooked.
I mean, I can see why he's not happy with some results. Maybe he wants to get everything he can from them so he can look through the file to make his own determination.
No, I'm sure he does want to get everything so he can look at it. I guess my question would be, okay, you don't think that they've done everything they should be doing. What are you basing that on? Where's your evidence?
Right.
Where is the smoking gun that says you didn't do this, 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 and this? I haven't seen that, and I don't know what that is. Maybe he does and hasn't shared it, or we just didn't see it. In 2009, according to the Lantern, Neil Rosenberg, Clint Florence's lawyer, wrote to Corbett to explain his client's refusal to take a lie detector test. Rosenberg indicated in his letter that the Columbus police investigating the case believed Brian was alive. Although he didn't provide any additional details, he wrote, "If Brian is alive, which is what I'm led to believe, after speaking with the lead investigator on the case, then it is Brian and not Clint who is causing this family pain and hardship. Brian should come forward and end this." Brian's brother Derek told the Lantern, "I've always thought he definitely knows something and just won't come forward with it. Derek believes that Brian might still be alive and that Clint knows where he might be."
And maybe he is still alive. And he should come forward to, at least to his brother, right? And say, "Hey, brother, I'm still alive. Sorry to do this to you. I know mom's gone, dad's gone, but I just wanted you to know I'm still here. But I just can't come out publicly and tell anybody." But poor Derek, you got to think, he's lost his mom, his brother, and his dad. I think it'd be nice to know if his brother was still alive.
You and I have done a number of unsolved cases where that theory is floated. Right? There's no body that's ever found. So there's always going to be someone that believes the person is still alive. What I always have trouble with is when people don't take any money, they don't really do anything in preparation for leaving. Now, you can make an argument either way, right? If you make that preparation, then somebody's going to know that or believe that you left voluntarily.
Right.
So if you're trying to do that, if that's what you want to accomplish and you don't want anyone to know you're still alive, then it would be hard. You almost have to just up and leave. But why? I always come back to why. What's right. The reasoning for, you know, a person like Brian Schaefer to make the decision that I need to get away from everyone in my life. I can't tell anyone that I'm leaving and I'm not taking anything with me. I'm going to start over in a foreign land. I don't get it.
Yeah. So I'll go out that night, make sure I'm seen. I'll call my girlfriend and leave her a voice message that I can't wait to see her and then disappear.
Here's the other thing specific to the Brian Schaefer case. If you were planning this elaborate ruse or escape, would you get sauced right before you tried to implement it? I would say probably not.
No.
Because it's going to be much harder for you to do it while you're drunk. But again, it's why these cases are so fascinating. You can go down all of the different rabbit holes. You can run through the theories. But at the end of the day, nobody knows.
No.
Now, there might be somebody that knows. Maybe Clint knows. Maybe Clint is the one person that Brian confided in if, in fact, he voluntarily disappeared and Clint swore that he wouldn't tell.
Anyway, don't worry. I'll say some stuff that will
shake
him up in the media. And
I won't take the lie detector test. I won't do any of that. I just don't believe that.
Yeah.
I truly in my heart don't believe that's what happened, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. You can't take it off the table. To me, it just doesn't seem very likely. As recently as 2019, Columbus police told the Columbus Monthly magazine that they still receive several tips a month regarding Brian's disappearance, although none have proved useful. One of the original investigators told the magazine that after reviewing the camera footage of that night, he is 100% certain that Brian did not leave by the escalator outside the bar. And that is a very interesting point. We mentioned it, right? There's one way,
right?
Up and down, and it's this escalator. So if Brian did not use the escalator, where'd he go?
Yeah. How did he get out of there?
I think that's a big mystery in this case. It's also why, you know, some people have theorized that he put on a disguise. He changed clothes. He did this. He did that. He did get down the escalator. Nobody recognized him. Now, I think you go back to what we said earlier. The detectives accounted for every person in the bar except for one.
Yeah.
Brian Schaefer. So I don't know. Make of that what you will. The Columbus Dispatch reported that in March 2021, the Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigations released an age progress photo of what Brian Schaefer might look like at age 42. It's available to view on their website. So as we wrap up this case, Gibbs, you know, the question remains, and it's been this way for, you know, 15 years. What happened to Brian Schaefer? Police told the Columbus Monthly magazine that they had theories, but they could not discuss them with the public. And really, until someone comes forward with more information in the case, including possibly Brian himself, we may never know. Anyone with information regarding Brian Schaefer's case or current whereabouts is encouraged to contact Central Ohio Crime Stoppers at 614-645-8477. You know, I said these cases are fascinating because of all the different theories and, you know, kind of playing what if this happened, that. But to be honest with you, Gibbs, in most of these types of cases, I tend to lean towards foul play.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't know how many people can make that decision that they're going to voluntarily get off the grid. That's the other thing we haven't talked about.
It's very hard to get off the grid today.
Right. You just can't leave. You also need to find a way, a mode of transportation that leaves a trail normally. I mean, are we theorizing that he somehow had doctored papers, documents, a passport, a new identity? Did he reach into a Jason Bourne-like bag?
Yeah, some bug-out bag ready
right.
to go.
And I think when you think through the chances of all of that, that's why I struggle.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it leads me back towards, obviously, a more grim outlook on the case, but to me, probably a more realistic one. Yeah. I hate to say it, which is he met with foul play at the hands of someone. That person is out there.
Yeah.
Probably still alive today. They know what happened. Someone knows what happened.
Sure.
And someone knows where his body is.
Right. Will we ever know that?
I don't know.
We don't know.
We got some voicemails, Gibbs. You want to hear those?
Yeah, let's hear them.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Gibby. My name's Emily. I'm from Washington State. I'm a big fan of true crime all the time. And I just listened to my first episode of True Crime All the Time Unsolved, the Shaw Creek killer case. And I gotta say, I'm really surprised that you guys wonder why the Shaw Creek killer didn't have more coverage. I feel like it's pretty obvious and well known in the true crime world that black women often don't get enough coverage, and women of color in general and victims of color in general don't get coverage. So I was really just surprised to hear you guys say that. And yeah, I hope maybe you can make a plug about that at some point, as it is a really big deal and something we should acknowledge in the true crime world. All right. Well, thanks for all you guys do. I love your show so much and love you guys both. Team Mike all the way, both Mikes. Keep your own time ticking. Thanks. Bye.
Well, when you get to listen to all of our Unsolved, you will hear us talk about that a lot.
Yeah, we really do.
I think when it came to this case, I was surprised by how little local coverage
right.
there was. I mean, a lot of times when you're talking about that, you're talking about national coverage. It doesn't make the mainstream media. When we did our research on this case, we had trouble finding even local information,
right.
and that's what was really surprising.
Hey, Mike and Gibby. My name is Caitlin, and I just wanted to comment on the Lars Matenk episode. I know you guys mentioned drug smuggling as a possibility, but I was wondering about a internal drug smuggling, if perhaps somebody made him swallow some pills, and because of that, his body could have rejected it, or if it wasn't coded correctly, it could have seeped into his system. But yeah, I'm a longtime listener. I love both of you guys and your content and how you try to advocate for the victims as best as you can. And I just really appreciate that. And just keep your own time ticking.
So Gibbs, to me, that's very interesting.
It is.
And not something that you and I thought about, because we're all not always the smartest pair.
Tool in the shed.
That could actually be a scenario.
Could be something he swallowed or something he put somewhere else in his body.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And it just didn't bode well.
You're talking about the way you normally take your Tylenol.
Exactly.
Which is different from the way the rest of us take our Tylenol. But in all seriousness, you know, you think about drugs and being put in balloons and things. You see it in movies and you see it in true crime cases all the time.
Sure do.
If one of those balloons or whatever it is happens to bust or pop open, you could be in serious trouble. I think you could die. And, but again, you know, to me that doesn't explain, okay, why would they never find his body? How far could he have gotten? It's still a really good theory.
It is. It could explain the erratic
behavior and all that. You still have those questions of where did he end up and why did no one find him?
Yeah.
Hey, Mark. Hey, Gibby. My name is Heather. I'm from small town Georgia called Bremen. We're probably like 45-50 minutes away. I love everything crime, and y'all are my absolute favorite to listen to. I'm obviously Team T-Cat. I love you, babe. I work in quality in a print shop 10 hours a day, 5 days a week, and I listen to you the entire time. My AirPods literally die twice a day. I just finished all the episodes of True Crime All the Time, and I'm getting ready to start Unsolved, so I'm excited for that. Anywho, thanks for all you guys do, and stay safe and keep your own time ticking. Bye.
One of my favorite accents of all time.
I know you love that
accent. I love that accent. So I know she probably won't hear this for a while unless she's listening to the new ones.
Right.
Depends. Some people go all the way back to the beginning and they have to work their way forward. Some people will listen to the new ones and then catch up gradually back. But either way, eventually she will hear this, and that's why I wanted to put it on Unsolved. I
wonder where she's 45 minutes away from.
I don't know. I thought that too.
Somewhere.
Yeah. Somewhere in Georgia.
Yeah.
Not from us, obviously, but
somewhere.
Atlanta would be the obvious choice.
Sure.
Because obviously that's the biggest city.
Right.
But we don't know.
We don't.
Could look it up.
Yeah.
But we won't. But we love you and we appreciate you calling in. All right, buddy. That is it for another episode of True Crime All the Time Unsolved. So for Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
That's the sound of another sale on your online Shopify store. But did you know Shopify powers selling in person too? That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/truecrime.